My great grandfather, my grandfather, my father were born in the farm.
My great great parents, my great parents, my father were born in that farm.
Ke ile ka kopa ho ba land commission hore ke kopa re ho sinyalala le nna Aryan Reza oral research le ka feela. I must identify the symmetries tsa ko hae le an identify the symmetries tsa ko bona. Le ko hae ko ne ntate moholo wa tswaletsweng teng le ko ntate a tswaletsweng teng. I will identify those places. But the government failed to do so.
I requested the land commission at some stage that they should accompany me and Kosi Nyalala to go to that farm such that I can identify my people's graves, and he must also identify his. But the government did nothing about that up until now.
In short, fella, Mr. Chairperson, ka tsalo ya rona bakhatla.
According to us, the Bakatlas,
re bana ba Kosi Pilane the first.
We are from the branch of Kosi Pilane the first.
Kosi Pilane the first was married to 14 wives. Sorry,
and the Pilane. But se ba re thotse tsena Roma le tsere ba ta buka re na thotse tso di bua. Di amana jang le sekamolao se re buang ka sona.
Mr. Kosi Pilane, will you please tell us how your statements are related to this bill in question today?
Okay. A kere ke boele ko morao ya ka ke tlhalositse ko ntlheng gore why ke le mona ke tliswa mo gore why ke bua so. Ke buisa ke gore molao o Nyalala ha bo lo practice before lona le bua ka gona ka 2008.
Then
ke nahana hore ha re ka tswelela ka nthweni ke mo mathateng.
The reason why I'm here, I want to show to you that Nyalala, this abusive actions, he has been carrying on with this long ago before you even proposed this bill. So that means if this bill is granted, that will mean I'm in trouble.
In short, Mr. Chairperson, I mean, ha ke le ngwana wa hao, go ngwalla lengwalo gore ke na le sello ka wena wena o bo nka o nkisa court go ra ra o nkgathalle.
What I'm trying to put in picture here is that look, as a father I write a letter complaining about X and Z, but instead of talking this or with me amicably, you are referring the matter to court. What does that mean? It means that you don't care about me,
because ha ke bua ka di clans. Kosi e busa di clans. Clane e busa kgoro. If you've got a problem ko claning ya hao, you consult with your headman. Ha headman e mosola e ya ko kgosi. Ha kgosi e palwa, then you refer the matter to the court. But what Nyalala did, he never consulted with me. And ke mo hlomphile, ke mo ngwalla lengwalo.
Look,
but he never came back to me. Instead, he never went to court. That's why I end up in constitutional court. Resolutely, he go high court twice. Then he made an appeal to constitutional court.
He took me to court. That's why today we are at the constitutional court. As a chief, you have to work with the council together with the community. But he didn't do that.
So, well, that was Mudula Stilo. Ke ka mo kere na molawana ona mo se sebaka re gatlhano lona go ya ka tula minister, but the consultation e editsweng ga se yona. Ke ka mo kere ha re bitsa di meeting re di biletsa batho ba urban area, we must go to urban areas. O se ka mpile tsa go toropong, because ha re na tšhelete o palama from here to town. Lona you've got all the facilities.
Yeah.
Lena le dikoloi, petrol allowance, you've got this and that. You must go to the people.
Okay.
Eh, dintho a di a go batho.
Okay.
A batho ba ska latela dintho.
In essence, we are not against this bill. We are against the consultation done concerning this bill. You mustn't call people to the cities or to the urban areas. You must go to the people. You are having resources. You must go to the people. Thank you.
In short, thank you very much, Mr. Shepherd. Commissioner? Honorable Bloom?
Yeah, thank you, Shepherd. Can this, the presenter give me the clarity? Is this Nyalala having installed documentation by the government that he's a chief? If he is, why the speaker is not respecting him? Because you can find that why he said it's not he doesn't have a land, but he's a chief. He's addressing him as a chief. How does this two relate?
I said the so-called chief. Me myself as Mokhatla, Khosi ke moaparangwe. How about you, Khosi? Ha papa wa tlhokofala gore ntata wa sa le mo bophelong a re ke gathetse ngwana ka ke batla onke diphatšhana tsa gao tsene mo wa e gatisiwa go supa gore o ngwana wa kgosi ntata go nyalala was not married. He was never a chief. He had just bogosi bo o nanyalala and ke bua yalo why because Nyalala was installed by Chief Lentswe in Botswana and go ya ka molao o re o saenetseng wa South Africa. The rightful people who install a house is the royal family. And the rightful people who install a house most still is the royal family. But Nyalala was never a royal family. And I will look here and train. That's why I get rid of the chief to the house. We have done so many consultations.
Mr. Tepila, ke o mametse no le ka wa raba fela tseno no a di sebetse mona mo buang ka tsona. Mme ne ke tla kopa commissioner gore se ka mmotsa dipotso tse tle tsa gore a qoqe mathata a hae. Honorable Bloom.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I can hear that he's very hurt inside. Chairperson, the advice that I'm not having a question, the advice that I can give to him is the petitions committee. Maybe the secretary must help him and to have that process in following up all the allegations that he is making, so that the petitions committee must follow up on that, because he's saying he has followed all these things, constitutional court and whatever, but maybe Geshwin can help him, connecting him with the petition committee. Thank you, sir.
Welcome to the House of Deputies.
Ke motlwile
ke lebo
me ke kopa gore go be jalo ntate
ke lebo ke lebo Bafokeng Land Buyers Association. Just a moment, I'll respond to that. Honorable Bloom?
Some of the members have complained, not the members, some of the participants, that there's no tea, there's no coffee, there's nothing yet, and I don't know how long are we going to sit.
No, we're just about to finish. That will be sorted out.
Oh, it will be sorted out.
No.
Yeah, no, let's tell them. No, it will be sorted out.
Honorable Bloom. That is a bit.
Yes.
Okay.
Ntate ha nyane fela ona le phoso e setseng. Ntate manene ntate Philan o representa ke Legal Resource Center vale ha bue. Ha bue vale ha qeta ho bua re nana ho qetile ba kopa ho etsa le bona ho present. Honorable member. It has been brought to my attention that in the plan was supposed to be represented by the Legal Resource Center, and he didn't mention it. And they would like to make their presentation. Can you please be brief?
Thank you, Chair, and apologies for the confusion earlier on. I'll try to keep my comments as brief as possible. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity given to the Legal Resources Center to address you on the Traditional Courts Bill. You have the detailed written submissions that we filed, and I'm not planning to go through that in any detail. What I propose to do is to just confine our comments to some of the key issues that have been raised in the submission so far, and some of the main submissions that we've made in our written submission. Just very briefly about the Legal Resources Center. The Legal Resources Center is a non-profit public interest law firm. Much of the work that we do is focused around representing poor rural communities. We act on behalf of a number of communities in relation to issues regarding traditional leadership. We've acted on behalf of communities in the Dachenskral area. We've acted on behalf of Mr. Pilani, and this is an ongoing issue that we encounter in our work on a daily basis. What I propose to do is to deal, in the presentation, to focus on some of the key constitutional aspects of the bill. To then look at issues around the underlying principles which we believe the Traditional Courts Bill is based, and the reason why we would submit it cannot simply be panel beated into a constitutional state at this point. And to start off with, the starting point in our view is the provisions of Section 8 of the Constitution, which state that the Bill of Rights applies to all law, and in terms of Section 2, that any law or conduct that is inconsistent with the Constitution is invalid. And we would submit, in essence, that the scheme that is proposed in the Traditional Courts Bill cannot pass constitutional scrutiny for a number of reasons. The first, and this has been a subject for discussion in the hearing so far, and I'm not going to go into it in any detail, is that we submit that the Traditional Courts Bill structure violates the provisions of Section 8 of the Constitution in that it allows a situation where people that may not wish to be subject to the jurisdiction of a traditional court are not able to exercise a choice to opt out of that system. And that point has been made on a number of occasions so far. We'd also submit that the Traditional Courts Bill prohibition against the legal representation in its proceedings cannot be justified in terms of the Constitution, and that it would infringe the rights of accused persons that appear before these courts and their rights to be represented by legal practitioners. But there's two key principles that we would like to focus on that are somewhat different from the submissions that you have. And they deal with the reasons why we would suggest that even if it was the case that particular provisions of this bill could be amended, the so-called reference to panel beating that many of the members have picked up on, we would submit that there's two key difficulties with it. And unless those two key difficulties are addressed, it is not in our view possible for this bill to pass a constitutional attack. And the first is insofar it relates to the question of separation of powers. Now, I'm not going to go into the principle in any detail, and I think it's very clear to most people that what the South African Constitution entrenches is a separation of powers between the national between the legislative, the executive, and the judicial arm of government. Now, the structure of the Traditional Courts Bill, in essence, mandates senior traditional leaders or persons that are appointed to be presiding officers in the traditional courts to act as the exclusive forum within which those disputes will be determined. Essentially, and I could refer you to Section 9, 4B of the Traditional Courts Bill, where there may be a dispute concerning the nature or the particular custom that is going to be applied in the dispute. Now, what that effectively provides is for the presiding officer to not just preside over the dispute, but to determine the nature of the law itself. And we would submit that that would violate the provisions of the Constitution that entrench separation of powers. The second point that we'd like to make on this is that the Constitution in Section 39 talks about the obligations of any court, tribunal, or forum to develop customary law in order to promote the objects of the Bill of Rights. Now, it's unclear how this could occur within the current structure of the Bill, and that is for two reasons. That generally speaking, the appeal structure allows for the development of the law. The more restrictions that are placed on the ability of people to appeal those decisions that may be made in a traditional court, the less the possibility is of the law developing and achieving and getting to a point where it is not considered to be the so-called stepchild as it has of the legal system thus far. And we would submit that the consequence of restricting in very, very narrow terms the rights of people to appeal against those decisions means that customary law is then unable to develop properly as the Constitution requires it, as Section 39 of the Constitution mandates. The second difficulty from a practical point of view is that the prohibition of legal representation in those proceedings would make it very difficult, again, for there to be a development of particular legal issues or particular issues of customary law that arise in those forums. And we would submit that there are significant difficulties that the bill would have in addressing those underlying issues of principle. It may be possible to deal with some issues in isolation, but unless the underlying issues of principle relating to what is the appropriate role of a person that is of a traditional court that may impose sanctions, state-sanctioned measures that would impact on a person that would be found guilty of an offense in those courts. Unless those fundamental issues of principle are addressed, we don't believe that the Traditional Courts Bill in its current state will pass constitutional scrutiny. Mr. Chair, the details of the various arguments that the Legal Resource Center has proposed around problems with the bill are set out in detail in our written submissions. A lot of the issues have been canvassed before, and I don't propose to repeat them now. And if there are any questions arising from what I've said so far and from our submission, I'd be happy to deal with those.
Okay, thank you very much. Any engagement with the presentation, JJ?
No, thank you, Chair. Let me just make a comment and just ask one clarity. Thank you for your presentation. Yes, it's still what we're reading through here. There's only one clarity here in your submission, and you said, due to the limited knowledge regarding traditional justice system in South Africa, there is insufficient information before the committee to adequately evaluate the bill at this stage. All I'm asking you now, due to that statement, what in your opinion will be an adequate time or sufficient time to have that information for this committee in order to see to it concerning the problems that you just raised that is in this bill? And the other question is, you said there are two things, and you just said that why you think, because you said two things why you said, and I think you mentioned Section 39 is one of them, that this thing is unconstitutional. Just keep us clear in there. Thank you.
To respond very briefly to the first point, I think it would be difficult to answer the question in terms of timing. A number of presenters have raised the issue around consultation with rural people. Mr. Polani expressed it very well when he said that many people in areas in the area where he comes from simply don't know about the bill. And one cannot equate consultation with particular interest groups, whether that's urban people or traditional leaders, with consultation with communities that are going to be affected and call before these very courts. I don't think it can be answered in terms of timing. With regard to the second question, the reason why we say the bill is unconstitutional is on two main grounds. The first is that our view is that the provisions of the bill that state that a person is not entitled to legal representation simply cannot pass the limitations test in the Constitution. This issue has, in fact, been litigated before in a case called Fairney, which was dealing with regional courts established during the time of the former Transkei. It's unlikely in our view that that limitation on that fundamental right would be there could be a successful argument that it's justifiable. The question of equality and more specifically the right of people to equal protection of the law is a fundamental flaw with the principle of the bill itself. And then again, what the other issues regarding separation of powers, that relates to the bill in its current form, as well as in terms of some of the proposals which you've heard, that the solution to that is to have these powers exercised by traditional councils. Quite aside from issues relating to the democratic decision-making process in those councils, it would, in our view, it would in fact not be an answer to the point. It would make the point even stronger. If it amounts to a conflict of separation of powers where a traditional leader exercises judicial functions and not only that, but determines the law himself, we can't see on what basis it could be found that if a traditional council does that, it's somehow constitutionally valid.
Any further engagement? Okay. No, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Then that you can continue. Can you also be brief?
Thank you, Chair President. I have a presentation here, a PowerPoint presentation on our screen. There's a lot that we can actually talk about on the Bafokeng, and I thought that this PowerPoint presentation would help us, going through the few points that we prepared. It's not really easy talking about the Bafokeng. I've noticed that a number of submissions that we made to Parliament, both provincial and national parliaments, have not come out, you know, in a manner which we would have loved to. They haven't been actually presented in a manner that we would have loved. We thank the chairperson for this opportunity. It's a very rare opportunity for it might be the only opportunity for us to be here and present and talk about, you know, our experiences within the faculty. My name is Tutira Poho. I'm the secretary of the Bafokeng Land Buyers Association. It's an association, the Bafokeng Land Buyers Association is an association of communities and individuals who reside within the Bafokeng traditional community, the Bafokeng tribe. The Bafokeng tribe is made up of 29 villages, and some of the members of these villages and communities from these villages in their organized form came together in 2006, 2008 to say, we're not really happy about our administration in the Bafokeng, and we would like to, you know, find ways and means to express our, you know, discontent against, you know, not only the Bafokeng chief, but his traditional council as it dispenses its authority within the Bafokeng. So as a way of introduction, Chairperson, the Bafokeng Land Buyers Association is currently involved in what we call a landmark case in the Mafeking High Court, where these communities that form the Bafokeng are claiming right title on land, claiming the titles on land that form the Bafokeng geographic area. I would like to play this clip, the short clip that would give an overview in support of, you know, the presentation that will follow. The Bafokeng Tribal Authority is not only about traditional governance. There's a whole lot involved within the Bafokeng. And I think this clip, which was captured in 2010, during the 2010 FIFA World Cup soccer tournament, where the association and community members came together to, you know, try to express and, you know, alert members of the public about, you know, their frustrations within the Bafokeng. We were very fortunate to have received audience from this UK-based Channel 4 News, which did this clip, which I will play now. So,
now to South Africa, where beneath the glamour of the World Cup, the tensions simmer. The land around the stadium where England's World Cup squad are based has found itself at the heart of a dispute by poor communities who say they're being robbed mineral rights worth billions. The rural Bafokeng nation is being challenged by a group of families and community organisations who claim the proceeds from platinum mining are being wasted. The reserves near Rustenburg are registered in the Bafokeng nation's name, but the Groofables say their ancestors own the land and they want a share of the lucrative mining proceeds. Kemi and Zerum report.
Yes, the grace of my great-grandfather.
Bafokeng are claiming everything, in fact. What do they do with the money?
You don't trust them because you are poor.
The held as a triumph of modern South Africa. Shrewd post-apartheid has built schools, clinics, a lavish football stadium, and a five-star sports complex that persuaded the English FA to make it their World Cup base. But this very land is the battlefield for a bitter legal dispute that goes back generations.
The whole place from here is down.
Ancestral graves and early 20th century deeds held by local families are proof its claim. Rights to exploit the platinum below have been stolen, so they've taken their struggle to court. The case will be heard this autumn. So according to this sign, this land belongs to the Bafokeng.
No, totally no. This is rubbish. Our land. Just to prohibit us any development that you want to do in this property. This is our property, not the Bafokeng's property. This is our land, this is our own land.
Denied ownership under White rule, Platinum Bonnell allegedly being withheld from families contesting the new owner, the Bafokeng Kingdom. They are angry, they are still poor, while the Bafokeng's favoured villages, they say, have become rich. Wasn't the end of apartheid democracy meant to solve?
Anything in fact, it has nothing. The end of apartheid. It's only in ways that apartheid is there.
Across the Royal Bafokeng Nation are dozen families who say that the platinum rich land here is theirs, not the Bafokeng. That it was first bought by their ancestors, not the Bafokeng. And the money that's being made by mining is being squandered on a World Cup that will benefit very few people. Platinum-financed football, a reminder of the resources some argue should have been spent elsewhere.
You're bringing international football stars to Rustenburg. Is this not good?
It's heartbreaking because I go to bed without food. A children who still have to walk to school barefooted. You know, everything, it's bad.
Can people here afford the ticket?
They can. They can. I mean, if for the mere fact that you can't afford to the doctor, how will you say, I'm going to, even if it's a one-time thing, how can you afford the ticket for the match?
Rustenburg's World Cup games have been met with several small protests near the Royal Bafokeng Stadium. But the king says the legal claim against him will fail, for the land is held in trust for all Bafokeng. Points to this year's £80 billion development budget, with a quarter pledged for education and a sixth for health and social services.
This is your land for the benefit of the whole Bafokeng. Prevent these uprisings historically. So it's not the first time. I don't believe it's been the last time.
It is your belief that the courts will prevail and part of the land you are mining is yours and not theirs.
Like I said, the land belongs to the community. It's not mine, but his. It belongs to everybody.
Platinum has bankrolled the Bafokeng's success. Their assets now top $3 billion. They plan to float their investment vehicle, Royal Bafokeng Holdings, on the London Stock Exchange later this summer. A few weeks later, a South African court will decide if the Bafokeng have built their fortune on land that is not theirs. KB and Verum, Channel 4 News.
Thank you. That was the clip that was aired in the UK Channel 4 News. I'm here, Chairperson, with two of my colleagues. I'm here with Mayor Sina Mutielwa. She's from one of the villages that makes the Bafokeng Tribal Authority, one of the 29 villages that makes the Bafokeng Tribal Authority. And we are also accompanied by a member of the royal family from the Bakugung Barateo in Lida near San City, who also comes here in her personal capacity, Mayor Chongo Munnakgotla. Chairperson, The Bafokeng
as it's been shown, a lot of people do not actually understand the, you know, dynamics within the Bafo game. That is what we've gathered as the association, as we, you know, as we present in many fora that we get exposed to or get invited to. There's a misconception that the Bafo King is a homogeneous tribe. Within the Bafo King, Chairperson, as I stated before in my introduction, this map of the Bafo King as we see it now depicted is actually divided in a number of farms. You will note that there could be around the Bafo King, in the current ongoing case in the Mafeking High Court, there is about 61 registered farms in the Bafo King. And these farms, as it's been alluded to before, they've been claimed by families. Since 1906, 1908, we have a case that was presented or was heard in the High Court in Gauteng, where two of these communities actually contested wrongful registration of their farms in the name of the chief and the Minister of Native Affairs. This small dots, or if you follow the case are there, these small dots, these are community settlements. The community of Shaning on Farm 90 claim and have, you know, submitted papers. They've lodged this claim in the Mafeking High Court. It's a contested matter as we speak. They claim to have bought their farm separate from this community in Putanin. And the land use at Channing Village near Sun City is solely for that community in Channing and not for any other community within the Bafo King. So I am from this village here in Mohono. My community does not have, you know, use a right to go into Channing community for grazing of whatever purpose. Likewise, the Channing community cannot come and use our farm for grazing or for plowing or for any other, you know, activity that they want to use. So there's various levels of authority within the Bafo King. The community of Channing has got its own khotla, which historically has had powers to give residential land and business rights to its Channing people. The community of Channing has got people of Ndebele origin who observe their own, you know, cultural and customary practices. Within Luka, this area here, we have a community of Bapiring. We know of Bapiring Ba Mabalani in Mabalstad, which is a totally different community to the Bafo King, as we know the Bafo King today, the Bafo King who finds their origin in Lesotho. In Luka, we have Bakwenabamo Hopa. And here in Thekwane, we do have some of Bakhatla there, who in the mid-19th century also bought their own farms, separate from all the other villages or the Bafo King as, you know, a colonial construct, as it, you know, as it's now referred to as the Bafo King tribe. So the point I'm making, the Chairperson, is that where you find disputes in these various communities who have control over their portions of land, those disputes are resolved at those makhotla, at community councils, kumakhotle, not at tribal council or at traditional courts. It's very rare that those disputes get referred to the tribal court. Many of these communities, in fact, do not have confidence in taking their issues to the tribal court. The makhotla or community councils have been quite effective over the years in resolving disputes within their communities. In fact, the Bapiring would contest the authority of the Bafokeng to come and allocate stands in their area when they have been allocating stands over the years. We have submitted, Chairperson, as the Bafokeng Land Buyers Association, we have submitted in 2008 against the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act. We contended in our submission then, which was noted by the Northwest Provincial Legislature, that some of the provisions in the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act do not find resonance with our dynamics within our traditional community. In as far as there are historical land claims, historical disputes towards traditional leadership, in as far as those disputes have not been resolved, it couldn't have been possible for the TG, the Traditional Leadership Governance Framework, to have passed. So we actually did make those submissions not only to the provincial legislature, to the Commission on Traditional Leadership and Disputes. We've submitted to the South African Human Rights Commission. So those disputes are not actually new. We are raising this point here because we want to emphasize, the fact that has been raised, during, this hearing, that the traditional councils that the Department of Justice has proposed that, this bill fall under, the traditional councils are themselves, fraught with disputes. In our case, as the Bafokeng Tribal Authority, a number of communities are saying we do not subject ourselves to the traditional council, which has got authority over us. Substantively, Chairperson, the traditional council comprises of 60% councillors which are nominated by the chief. And the remaining 40%, there are possibilities that, some of the 40% could still be influenced. So it's highly unlikely that the traditional council could be impartial in resolving, disputes. Traditional disputes or customary disputes brought before them. So, well, in that regard, we would say the tribal court has proposed, or this bill as proposed by the Department of Justice, will not be properly housed under traditional councils which are highly disputed. I think I've touched on, the influence of the Bafokeng, how powerful. A lot of people are not comfortable in speaking against the Bafokeng, Chairperson. It could be for various reasons. one of which would be, would date as far back as, you know, the late 19th century, when the buffer game was actually highly, you know, supported by government. There was nothing that communities could speak against, you know, the buffer game without government intervening, the commissioners at the time, without them intervening on behalf of the chief. So over time, this has, you know, been internalized by communities within the buffer game to speak against the injustices, you know, as perpetrated by the tribal council against its own people. Over time, you know, the state has used the police, and today it's not the state that uses the tribal authority to advance its, you know, control over the area. It is the mining companies that has actually occupied the land, these lands which are claimed, which are now said to be using the tribal authority to advance its own economic interests. So I would give an example, living example, recent example of, you know, the suppression of an oppression sent out to community members, not only within the buffer game, but within the Rustenburg region. And, you know, the use of state organs or the influence in state organs, we've written about those. It's published on our website. We've copied various Chapter 9 institutions about the danger of, you know, this influence that the buffer gang has over, you know, state organs within our region, which has left us as community members paralyzed without help. I would give an example on what actually happens in terms of policing in our area. We have a tribal police, well-sponsored organ of our traditional council, the tribal police. Guruna, they are called Mabong. The local South African police station, you know, take cue from the tribal police. The tribal police in our area have, you know, powers to arrest community members and sort of dump them at local police stations. We've seen this in the recent act, which was, you know, widely published in national print, when the chief authorized demolition of tuck shops in our village. These people who suffered this injustice took the matter to the local police station, tried to open up charges, and the police station simply referred them to the chief, the very same person that, you know, these people are complaining about. The police station simply said, no, we can't open, you know, a charge sheet for you. You have to go to the chief, to the tribal court. And, you know, such action, as I've stated, was led by the tribal police. The tribal police guides the South African police in the area. We've recently seen our municipality also, you know, come out, you know, in protection of the chief and his tribal authority, where we've seen a number of communities, you know, right to demonstrations, right to gatherings, you know, being, you know, violated. There's a regulation at the local municipality that says if you want to demonstrate or march against the chief, you must go and ask for permission from the chief. You want to march against the chief, the local municipality says to you, if you want to march against the against the chief, you must go and ask the permission from the chief to march against him. And a number of such, you know, demonstrations or gatherings have been aborted as a result. We've seen, you know, there's been one or two violent demonstrations which led to arrests of young people in our area, young girls, some of whom, you know, were arrested, you know, without any basis, you know, and they spent sort of 2 weeks in holding cells in the local police station. We are really concerned as the Bafokeng communities on the influence of the traditional council, the Bafokeng traditional council, and the Bafokeng chief in our organs of state. We don't have confidence in having this bill being housed under the traditional council as proposed by the Department of Justice. So in conclusion, Chairperson, we want to state further and contend, you know, and submit that, you know, there are customary disputes currently taking place which are being, you know, resolved in the ordinary course of law, like the magistrate court. We don't see, and this has been going on for years, we don't see, you know, why we can't continue, you know, using the court of law while, you know, and another, you know, while this vacuum on adjudicating customary practices is still being looked at. The problem that we would encounter, Chairperson, is that within the Bafokeng, as we all know, the Bafokeng is a mining area. We have backyard residents. Our host communities have actually rented out their yards to mine labor, mine migrant labor who come from different, you know, ethnic backgrounds, from, you know, Mozambique, from Eastern Cape, from all around, you know, from the country. So we do not believe that, you know, those migrant laborers who do not actually subscribe to Bafokeng customs, you know, could be summoned to appear before the Bafokeng tribal council should there be any dispute. We don't see this as being practical. And this could actually lead to ethnic clashes within the area. In conclusion, Chairperson, we see the traditional courts bill as a veil for rural suppression and oppression. There is this unintended consequence, which is highly unthinkable, you know, which people have not actually thought about, but which was presented earlier by Lamson Maluleka from the Makuleka family, I mean Makuleka village, that the tribal councils are actually waiting on this bill to be passed to give their tribal police powers to pounce on us. The sanctions that will be meted out by the tribal council will have to be enforced. The tribal councils do have well-resourced police security mechanisms that they will use to enforce their sanctions. And how they are regulated is something else. It's not being clearly outlined here. How the tribal police are being regulated is not something that has been touched on. The very bill, Chairperson, the traditional courts bill, dictates that we take our dispute to the disputed tribal courts. While we say our disputes, customary disputes, have been, you know, resolved over years at family level and at community councils, Kumakhosi. So the bill itself, you know, distorts our customs and traditions. The people have spoken, the chairperson, that this bill should be, the majority of those that have spoken over the week have indicated that they are not, you know, happy about the bill. We would like to add our voice to that call that this bill be scrapped. It is not worth, you know, panel beating. It should not be withdrawn. Chairperson, we would like to reiterate that the National Assembly in 2008 actually said this bill is unconstitutional. We've had, you know, legal comment here that this bill will not pass constitutional muster. It is not worth, you know, taking this bill back when we know that the substance is, you know, grossly flawed. We would therefore, you know, add to the voice that this bill be scrapped and request that the members, the honourable members here present, perhaps if there are members who were present in 2008 and who were part of deliberations then on the bill, should actually, you know, stand out and, you know, proclaim and say we were there, like the minister has, you know, indicated in a speech yesterday, that she was there. And we urge the honourable members today who will have, you know, this opportunity, should this bill come back, it is the honourable members here present who should stand up against the bill, like the minister did yesterday. We hope that this bill doesn't come back. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, any questions of clarity? Honourable Bloom?
Chairperson, it's not a question for clarity. It's also advice, because this is a serious matter, like the previous one. And to refer it to that committee, petitions committee, because something really needs to be done in their case. Thank you very much.
Honourable members, we are supposed to have the last presentation and then we are done. Can we call the Commission for Gender Equality? And maybe I must indicate to them that today we were supposed to start at 9 and finish at 11:30. And then we got an indication that you will be late, and we decided to include people we did not even shortlist. So can you please be brief?
Chairperson, can you repeat that? I have not listened very well. What are you saying? They must be brief.
Yes. Please.
Thank you very much. Yes. Thank you very much. Sorry, the people are asking again. Now I'm saying, no, the staff are striking here. There's no coffee. They are busy with placards outside, demanding more salary. Thank you.
Record that we're not late as a commission. We're excluded from the processes until we wrote a letter and were informed yesterday at 2 o'clock that we're supposed to present today too. And I communicated to the Honourable Chair that I could not get flights to here from Johannesburg. I had to go via Durban. Should be on record, Chairperson. Chairperson, we also, it's also important to put on record that the Gender Commission from 2008 has been involved in these processes. We are the ones who made submissions to the National Assembly, hence the bill, together with other civil society organizations, hence the bill was withdrawn. And we're at our dismay, we're excluded from the processes as a constitutional body as well. So I think in future, it was the first time that we're excluded from the parliamentary processes.
Can you please not delete that, because that is the, you cannot dictate to the committee how it should shortlist.
That's fine, but I wanted to explain.
It's not necessary.
Okay.
Honorable Gunda?
No, Chair, I want to support you, and I don't like the way you put it to the committee. It's totally out, Chair. We have done our utmost best. We couldn't have all 67 people here. We couldn't. We have tried our best, and I would like him to reject the attitude that he had towards the way he put those things, Chair. It's wrong.
And Entertain, it's true, you were not shortlisted. We went an extra mile to include you. It is not fair that you must start with those comments when you were not shortlisted.
Okay, thanks, Chair. I said that, but I wanted to explain why we did it. I mean, that's why I had to actually explain that. Thanks, Chair. Thank you very much for allowing us to present. I'm going to be very brief as well, because I know I think we've received more submission around this particular case. We know that CGE is an independent judiciary body created in terms of Section 187 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. I must just state that I'm one of the ratios of the chairperson of the Gender Commission. One of the tasks that the CGE is actually entrusted to do is to monitor and evaluate the policies and practices of government and private sector to ensure that they promote and protect gender equality in the Republic. Going to rush on this one. CGE position on the bill. The CGE takes cognizance of the following issues in relation to the bill, more especially Article 7, Subsection 8 of the SADC Protocol on Gender and Development, which requires South Africa to put in place legislation that must ensure equal treatment by women in traditional courts, as well as Section 211 and 212 of the Constitution, which gives recognition to the institutions, status, and role of traditional leadership. Therefore, Chairperson, developing a traditional court bill is an obligation in terms of SADC protocol and is also provided for in the Constitution. However, it must be borne in mind that the traditional court bill must pass the constitutional muster to the extent where it protects the rights of both women and men. CGE acknowledges the role of traditional courts in controversial South Africa society, and more especially in a society that is transforming itself. Therefore, the CGE expectation is that the traditional court bill or any other bill will pave the way for a single justice system for all South Africans, irrespective of their cultural background or where they reside accordingly. The CGE recommendation, redrafting, overhaul, or rejecting the bill if it's in the current form. Chairperson, we also, if you read the bill, more especially clause 3, the guiding principles. The guiding principles seek to align the bill to the Constitution, but in reality, the majority of the clauses go against Constitution. These include the fact that individuals are denied legal representation in serious cases such as malicious damage to property and assault. Furthermore, no appeal lies when a conviction is made in terms of clause 20. Chairperson, jurisdiction may also be imposed on individuals who have a right to choose the forum which can be best adjudicate their dispute. Further, a failure to take into account the full range of traditional justice structures, such as traditional counsels and those of the headmen and the white women, is unconstitutional. Chair, the fact that presiding officers can be exempted from training will lead to a skills gap where presiding officers will deal with similar matters differently. This will allow for differential treatment in similar disputes and amounts to unfair discrimination. Such a clause must be revised to ensure compliance with Section 9 of the Constitution. Chairperson, as a commission, we receive a number of complaints from the public. Most of these complaints relate to widows. The CGE received numerous complaints by widows where they were deprived of their matrimonial property by family of their deceased spouse. These disputes are likely to be settled fairly by traditional leaders who enforce these unfair practices and also pressuring officers. They will adjudicate in these matters. This is in conflict with the separation of powers and is very unconstitutional. Such matters must be excluded from the jurisdiction of traditional courts. Settlement of criminal disputes, Chairperson, by traditional courts is set out in the schedule, violates individuals' right to a fair trial, as set out in Section 35 of the Constitution. The reason is that presiding officers are not required to have legal qualifications. This means that individuals tried in traditional courts, magistrate courts, will be tried differently in similar offenses. This is unfair discrimination and in conflict with Section 9, Subsection 1 of the Constitution. This cannot be condoned by the Commission for Gender Equality. Sanctions that may be imposed by traditional courts include forced labor and deprivation of benefits that may accrue in terms of customary law. This clause is unconstitutional because it may impose a burden on people who are already impoverished and disadvantaged. The CGE recommends specific and unambiguous sanctions which act as a general deterrent instead of measures that create undue hardship. Clause 9 of the bill, Chairperson, prohibits legal representation, and I know most of these other organizations actually hammered on this point. Allowed for spouses to represent each other is a case of formal gender equality, which may not necessarily translate into substantive gender equality because on many instances where women are excluded from participating in traditional courts. In order to ensure compliance with this law, the CGE recommends inclusion of penalty clause to ensure compliance. The other issue that came into play that CGE is also concerned about is around the issue of gays, lesbians, LGBTI. Traditional leaders display intolerance towards the LGBTI community. Such individuals are perceived as unholy and unnatural by certain traditional leaders. There is a strong likelihood that disputes by LGBTI individuals will not be adjudicated fairly. Therefore, the CGE recommends the insertion of a clause which will protect the rights of such individuals. Chair, in conclusion, the CGE understands that making a law is a parliamentary prerogative. And furthermore, the recognition of traditional leadership in customary law is enshrined in the Constitution. However, as a key stakeholder which has participated and cooperated with various stakeholders since 2008 when the bill was first introduced in the CGE, the CGE places on record that despite being strongly contested, the TCP has not been revised. Therefore, CGE requests that this committee should exercise its powers, overhaul, amend, if they could not completely overhaul the bill, abandon the bill, and address the constitutional shortcomings as well as to address the need to observe gender equality related essential instruments. Chairperson, I appeal to the committee that South Africa has signed a number of international instruments for us to use as a tool in drafting this bill. If we completely draft it, we must make sure that we observe all the African and international instruments as our way of measuring whether this bill will actually pass the constitutional muster. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and I apologize if I offended you, Chair.
I'm not offended. Thank you very much. Honorable members, can you engage with the presentation? Honorable Bloom.
Thank you very much, and thanks for the presentation. Chair, I don't know on which slide is it, but it's a slide. Thank you very much. I will read, then you will follow. This cannot be condoned, and the GC has proposed that presiding officers and traditional courts must have requisite qualifications. Can you tell me what type of qualification are you talking about? The qualification story. You understand my question? Yeah, let me ask another question. Chair, I think it's on the last slide. On gays and lesbians. On gays and lesbians. I think it's the last, not the last slide. Second last. such individuals are perceived as unholy and unnatural by certain traditional leaders. Can you give us examples of such cases? Because you are telling us this now, Chairperson. I need some examples of what you are talking about. Thank you very much.
You can respond.
Thank you, Chair. If we call this a traditional court, definitely a court needs a legal qualification. So that you'll be able, because it's going to be referred to other courts. And if you don't have it, it's going to be difficult. That's our position. I can't mention people's names on relation to LGBTI, but we have so many complaints in the General Commission that we can provide before the committee to show the complaints that we get as a General Commission in communities where these people, for example, the examples in Ladysmith where this has actually happened, the examples where people are beating up and so on. So that is in the public domain. So these things that happen in communities, people don't want, are not receptive to LGBTI community. As a commission, we have a number of complaints that we receive from committee members in relation to this particular issue.
Honorable Joseph.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just want clarity on the term used, forced labor. I think more than one organization have used that term, forced labor. I'm not able to read it in the proposed act. I know about correctional service, you have what they term community service, where people go out and do it in that way, but I'm not seeing the word forced labor, unless I haven't seen it. Let us talk.
For example, in traditional communities, for example, a woman has been convicted and could not pay a fine. Supposedly, they were going to ask her to actually come and work for a traditional lead and so on. Us, where we're staying, we really feel that that's going to be a force labor, and it's going to actually impact more on women and children, people who are poor, who are disadvantaged. And for us, that's the angle for actually coming through in relation to this particular matter.
Any further engagement?
Chairperson, let me just have clarity. You are saying there's no appeals that people can do when they have been found guilty?
No, the Act provides that you can go to the magistrate court in terms of the trust, in terms of the trust bill. So even though Chairperson, when we speak about appeals and this and that, it's going to be very difficult for women to actually do that. So in terms of the act, there is that you can actually go in the task bill, you can go to the next level. There is a section in the bill.
Any further engagement? No, I think we are done. Thank you very much. Let me take the opportunity to thank all people who made their presentations. We have heard what you said, and the committee will meet and deliberate on all submissions, and hopefully we will come to a workable and acceptable product. Thank you very much. You can join us to suffragation. For lunch, you can join us for lunch at 90 Plain Street. Yes. Honourable members, can you remain for 2 minutes?